If I could only play the guitar, if I could only play the triangle, I'd be happy. So I have zero musical skills, but I'm glad for those who do. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and get praying so we can get right underway because we got things to do today. All right, let's go ahead and do it together. Jesus, I am so utterly grateful for reminder. I'm thankful for reminder because I am so incredibly forgetful. It's like I know the things that I'm supposed to do. I know the right answers if I took the quiz. But it seems that after a few weeks or a few months, things just sort of fall out of my head. And then I'm reminded of what to do. And that's so much even what this whole little micro series is about. This idea of love, loving you, loving the outsider, loving the insider. And being reminded of the fact that we are built by you. We're not just born automatically completed and perfect. And you know, just figuring out Christianity in its most ideal way. We need to develop. And so we seek to be followers in training. We seek to chase after you, to mimic what we see in you, but we do it imperfectly. We are all too human in this. And so that's where, again, I thank you for not only reminder, but the fact that you are working something out in our lives. And so may we be attentive to that. May we listen to you. May we be eager for what it is you have for us. And man, may we take it seriously because it matters. And so we ask for your grace today to work in us and show us what it is you have for us because we are desperate to hear from you. And so we thank you for all that you are doing and for all of your work in our life in your perfect name. Amen. So if you are visiting with us this morning or maybe this morning you're in the room and you are not a Christian, I am really grateful you're here. Welcome. I'm so excited you're here. There may be any number of reasons that you are with us this morning. It may be that you're curious about the Christian faith. It may be that somebody was being dedicated up here and you're coming because you're supportive of that family. You may be here as a critic. You may be here as somebody even saying, I'm just going to take notes on everything I disagree with the whole time. You know what? I'm still glad you're here. I think that's awesome, all right? So I'm really happy about that. And I want to be clear maybe then with some language I'm going to use this morning to help us understand kind of the group I'm talking to. If you're a guest and you would say, I would not call myself a Christian in the truest sense, we're going to say that what we would label that as an outsider. Now, that's going to sound a little harsh at first, but you're going to see what I mean in a second. The other side of the equation are going to be those in the room who would claim to be a Christian in sort of an overt way, and we're going to say that you are an insider. What I mean by an insider versus an outsider, however, is that you are an insider in relationship to this book. In other words, you are one who says, I'm going to look inside this book. I am going to sift the contents that are inside this book. I'm going to take the information that is there into my life, inside my person, and I'm going to live from the inside out. So an insider is an insider to the book. And an outsider is a person who may have any other number of opinions on this book. It may be everything from it's destructive and dangerous to, oh, it's okay, but it's not for me, it's for others, and hey, you do me, I'll do me. That, like, there can be any number of things, but that's sort of what there is. There's insiders and outsiders. And so for those of us who are insiders, people who kind of dwell inside the book, we are always reminded throughout the content of this book that there is a unique responsibility that we have to live toward the outsider world in a certain kind of way. It's part of the uniqueness of the Christian faith. It can't just be we huddle together as a bunch of insiders and have no concern for outsiders. Rather, there's a huge amount of information in there that says, man, you have to be consciously aware of your relationship to the outside world. Now, I say all of that with kind of getting to this reality that I would venture to say that we've not always been good at how we as insiders live toward outsiders, right? We've not always been as thoughtful as a culture. Sometimes we're seen as pushy or edgy or judgmental or hypocritical or dull or hopeless, or joyless, or careless. All of which is loveless and fundamentally is Christless. right? But that's been the challenge that we've sometimes experienced. And I would say even those of us who are insiders have experienced other insiders that are like that, right? That you just kind of look and you cringe a little bit when they're on social media. Or you wince a little bit when you hear them in the break room or when you're hanging out with friends or maybe you know of a story somewhere in your past where you're like, oh man, it's those very people that sort of hurt the reputation of what we're really all about is trying to be insiders reaching out to an outside world. Now, the thing about Redemption Church that I love is that I think, man, there's a group of people that want to disrupt that stereotype. It's you. I mean, honestly, like, you all get that, man, we are imperfect people redeemed by a perfect God. We are incomplete, and we seek to be, hopefully, humble and gracious in the process. So again, I think you're a solid church in this way, but I also believe that we, as contemporary Christians, can do better. We can grow in this more, right? And so that's why we're doing this little series, being reminded of the fact that we are built in our Christian lives. We're not just automatically day one born into our perfection, right? It's not like the day that you said, I'm going to follow Jesus was the day that you were complete and you had it all figured out and you made no more mistakes and everybody knew you to be pristine. Like, it doesn't work that way. We have to grow into our maturity, just like anything else has to grow. And so this morning, I want to be reminded of what it means to be built, not born, to be a follower in training as it pertains to loving outsiders. Last week, we learned about loving God, right? And how really what that's all about is being so connected to God, so in tune with God, so needful of God and his grace that we then, man, we just pour everything into that. And from that, he kind of fills up our lives and he gives us abundant life. God didn't come in the person of Jesus to make our lives boring and dull and judgmental and everything else. He came to transform us and give us abundance of life. And that abundance then should spill out into the world around us. So if you would like to take notes this morning, we have an app on that app or some notes that you can follow along with, because today I want us to look at three simple points, three very simple points on what it means to be focused as outsider focused insiders, right? That's what we're trying to get to, outsider focused insiders and what that looks like. And so if I'm breaking out the points, the very first point is this: we as insiders will love outsiders best when we live out our life roles biblically. We, as insiders, we're going to live our lives best toward outsiders when we live out our life roles biblically. All right? Now, here's the emphasis in that first point. Our roles. Our roles. Right? Because here's part of the thing. When people go, man, I don't know about these Christians, right? Much of where they have frustration is they feel like what the job of evangelical Christianity has been for the last several decades has been to be the cultural referees in society, right? So every time there's something that doesn't comport with our moral code because we're insiders with insider standards, when we look at outsiders who aren't playing by the insider standards and we start kind of blowing the whistle with our striped shirts and our yellow flag, right? And we just play the referee. It's just so like, they just go, here they come again. Personal foul, marriage between a man and a woman, eternal penalty, second down. You know, like that. You know, they're, oh, here they come again. You know, it's like intentional grounding, divorce, 15-year penalty, third down. Yeah. And whatever the thing is, you know, offsides, Democrat, you know, right? Penalties, you know? Like, we're just constantly throwing flags and throwing penalties. And after a while, they just kind of look and they're like, man, why are you so fixated on our lives? Because when we look at your lives, they don't always look that different. And I think that's fair game, right? In other words, I think there should be way more focus as insiders to say, you know what? Before I worry about throwing a rock from my glass house, I should be focused on saying, man, what this book calls me to as an insider, I want to be in pursuit of that. I'm not going to worry about what my neighbor is doing down the street. I'm going to be more focused on what I'm doing in my own life, in my own marriage, in my own workplace, in my own parenting, in my singleness, whatever else. It's like there should be a lot more focus for us that what we are trying to accomplish as modern Christians is to not try to enforce messages for others, but to reinforce the message for ourselves, right? To live in such a compelling way that the critic at least can look and say, wow, there is really something different about you. There's something different about the way that you live and the standard that you live by. And it clearly seems to give you more abundance for life. You seem to have more joy and peace and purpose and stability. And man, what is your secret? See, there's a lot more mileage gained there than there is in saying, we got to make sure that we are in the world to let the world know that the world isn't playing by the rules that it doesn't hold to anyway. Right? See, my friend Paul understood this. I love what he does in 1 Corinthians, right? He gets it. He writes to this particular church with all kinds of things going on culturally. And he says, when I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with the sexually immoral people, I did not at all mean the sexually immoral of this world. I wasn't talking about the greedy or the swindlers or the adulterers, since this would mean you need to go out of the world. He says, for what have I to do with judging outsiders, right? He says, it's the insiders that I should be concerned with, right? But the outsiders, that's God's territory. See, I think for far too long as Christians within American society, we've tried to operate above our pay grade, right? I mean, that's kind of what's happened. Like God's like, okay, dude, I'm just telling you, here's what I want you to do. I want you to love your neighbor. I'll handle the rest. Here's what I want you to do. You embody how I transform lives. That'll be compelling to people. And I'll handle the rest. We're like, no. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and grab your gavel and your robe. And I'm going to make sure culture knows how broken culture is. All the while, the culture's looking, desiring, maybe even clamoring for somebody that actually embodies life change. Because people listen to people who are truly and inspirationally different. Therefore, it's not so much that we need to referee the outsiders, we need to reinforce the insiders by taking seriously what this prescribes for us in all the different areas of life, right? I mean, if we're going to be concerned about marriage in our society, we should most be concerned about marriage in the Christian church, right? That's where it's honored. That's where it's seen. That's where it's healthy. That's what moves other people to ask questions. Or if you're single in the room, right? If you're a single person, you're like, man, what's God's prescription for my singleness? And I want to model that because there's fulfillment in that. Especially after what we learned last week, where again, like we said, all of society is struggling right now. I mean, as far as like they're struggling with anxiety, they're struggling with depression. We've seen that, again, suicide rates are on the rise. There's a sense in which everybody thought life would fill them up, and yet life drains them out. And so all the more, they're looking around for somebody that displays abundance. And I believe that in this book is abundance. I really do. I don't think these are rules that sap us of life. I believe they're ideas that fill us up with a fullness of life. But it means we need to model those things. And our friendships being what the Bible prescribes there. And how we parent, how we are kids to our parents, how we conduct ourselves at work, how we conduct ourselves in our words, all of that with our money, everything else. I mean, that is what we are to display and focus on. And I'd go a step further. And it goes back to what I said with the parents up here today. I think we as Christians right now are poised for a really great opportunity within our society. I listen to some Christians and they act as though everything's just falling apart and Christianity is dying in the West and all these things. And I'm like, well, maybe there's some things that are dying that, how can I accelerate that? Right? Like, I would love to, give me the shovel, all right? I'm happy to throw the dirt on it. Because here's the thing that I think is so important, what we're poised for right now, to get back to our brand. To get back to our brand. If somebody said, pick one word that encapsulates the uniqueness of the Christian message, one word that encapsulates the mission of Jesus, one word that encapsulates the gospel, I think most Christians taking the test would say, well, that word is grace. Grace. And then we'd have to beg the question of the outsiders. Hey, outsiders, when you think of the Christian church, what's the one word that you would use? that captures how you see the church. I think there's a few words, some of which will cause me to lose my job. But they don't think that they're going to quick to say, oh, grace. Grace is it. They'd say, well, again, hypocritical, judgmental, narrow-minded, shallow, any number of things. But I'm not sold that the average answer would be grace. And yet we go back to what Jesus did, what he sought to accomplish in John chapter 1. This is the Word, and that is Jesus in this little context here. The Word, who is Jesus, he became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory. The glory is of the only Son of the Father, full of what? Of grace and truth. Now, I know some of my Christian friends are like, oh, right there, truth, 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 truth. Make sure the world knows truth. I'm like, yes, but here's the thing. Here's what I think is so important. As those who are insiders, we should live the grace of truth. We should live the grace of truth. Because again, I believe in this book, what God has prescribed is truth for a gracious way of living. And it's a grace to us to live by that truth because it gives abundant life. So we should live the grace of the truth. But when it comes to our relationship to outsiders, we need to share the truth of grace. It's the grace of truth in our life as insiders. It is the truth of grace that we are to share toward those who are outsiders. So this is why I keep saying, we don't need to tell the outsiders what to do. We need to live our lives in such a way that we embody the beauty of refreshing grace, the power of transforming grace, the disposition of compelling grace. Right? It's on us to say, this is how it's lived out. And again, from that, hopefully that's an attractant. I love what Paul says in Philippians 2. He says, do all things without grumbling or disputing. If we just did that, right? Like that would be like, they're like, wow, wait a minute, let me get this straight. So you got cut off and then you smiled and waved with all five digits, you know, like that's different. Yeah. When somebody mishandles you at work and you don't grumble or dispute or you're not difficult, man, that's different. So he says, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life. Again, like I keep saying, it's not about telling people how they should live. Rather, it's focusing on how we should live and inspire other people to that. Compelling lives, right? Because I don't know about you, but I notice that compelling people, they grab my attention. Compelling people grab my attention. Hypocrites don't grab my attention. Judgmental people, difficult people, dull people, angry people, demanding people don't grab my attention except in the negative. Right? But people where you're like, wow, you've got like real joyful discipline in your life. I want more of that. Those people grab my attention. And so if we're going to love outsiders, then man, the first thing is we have to, again, be focused on living out our roles more than telling other people how to live their roles. But hopefully from living out our roles, there's something to be noticed. The second thing that I think is so important for us as insiders when it comes to loving the outsider is number two in your notes, we love outsiders best when we care for our neighbors intentionally. When we care for our neighbors intentionally, Jesus rolls in with some legal scholars in his day, and they're debating what's the most important thing to follow, what's the biggest command of all the 650 commands in the Old Testament, and they nail it down right here. It says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. But the second thing is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other command greater than these. No other command, right? So if somebody said, all right, Matt, what is the most important thing I need to do in my life? If we could boil it down to two things, what am I supposed to do? And they're equal. There's this equality in the sense that it says, all right, first you're going to love God. That's the primary source of your affections. But instantaneous to that is by loving God, you're going to love what God has made, right? Every neighbor we have bears the image of God. So if we're going to love God, by extension, we're to love our neighbor. And if we're refusing to love our neighbor, but we say we love God, it actually says in another letter, 1 John, we are full of bunk, man. We don't know what we're talking about. Because it's not possible to say you love God but not love your neighbor. You have to love your neighbor by extension if you truly love God, right? Well, when this comes up, Jesus deals with some funny stuff in the Gospels. And one person's like, okay, love my neighbor. Who's my neighbor, bro? Trying to excuse that maybe some people aren't his neighbor. This is called the story of the Good Samaritan. It's this whole interaction where this Jewish man is robbed and beaten on the side of the road and his fellow Jews don't help him out. But then this Samaritan, who's basically this outsider, undesirous person to the Jewish culture, sweeps in, helps his neighbor, cares for him, binds up his wounds, inconveniences his own life for the sake of the person that is wounded. And Jesus is like, all right, what do you learn from that story? Who is the neighborly person here? And it throws off all the social conventions of the day because they're like, no, Jesus, you don't understand. Samaritans, those guys are punks and posers and dorks and losers, and they can't be our neighbors. There's no way that's going to be one of our neighbors. And then Jesus' point is basically, no, you don't get it, because basically the bottom line is, whoever is next to you, that is your neighbor. Whoever you find alongside you in life, congratulations, now you know the target that you are to love. And the trick for us as Christians in trying to be an intentional neighbor is that sometimes your neighbor is different than you. Sometimes your neighbor, they don't like you. Sometimes your neighbor disagrees with you. Sometimes your neighbor doesn't respect you. Sometimes your neighbor mocks you. Sometimes in your own sinfulness as a Christian, you mock your neighbor. And you don't care for them. You don't like them. You disagree with them. Other times, maybe your neighbor emboldens you or they dig you, whatever else, but they're all your neighbor. And here's the thing for us as Christians that we have to remember. Our ability to love our neighbor is something central to our faith. Maybe not ability as much as our calling to love our neighbor is central to our faith. In fact, Jesus goes even further and says, you're to love your enemy. This is unique. I guarantee you right now, there is not a group of people sitting at CNN in an anchor planning room someplace saying, we need to make sure those people at Fox News know we love them. Right? That's not happening. Tim Cook is not sitting at Apple going, we got to make sure Microsoft knows no matter what, we love our enemies. Doesn't work that way. Sports teams aren't sitting around making sure that their opponents know they love them. Right? There's no framework within the general world that says, man, I got to go out of my way to let my enemies know that I love them. No, there is a whole giant industry around division. How many of you saw the article just in the last like 2 weeks about how Facebook has monetized division? Anybody catch this? In other words, what they have as a part of their strategy is to say, how do we kind of put articles out there where we already know the populations that are in play because we take, you know, just data on everybody and everything, and we put articles where we know people are going to debate and fight those articles, and then we put marketing around those things so we can make more money through division. Right? So their whole campaign is how do we divide people? Again, nobody at Facebook saying, we've got to make sure everybody knows that we love our enemies. Let's post articles that get everybody together, like things of, like cats playing pianos. Nope. It's going to be, let's put an article that gets people to fight. Right? I mean, that's a little bit more, again, like I said, there's this whole industry around division. And so all the more then, as those who live as insiders inside the book, we need to start looking and thinking in terms of, all right, how do I change that tone, right? How do I err on the side of grace? How do I display a disposition of being a good neighbor? I like what Paul says in Romans. I like it in part because living in Rome in the first century was going to be a tough gig for a Christian. It was very pluralistic. There was a lot of ideas. There was hostility at times around those ideas. And this is what Paul tells the Christians there. He says, seek to show hospitality, right? To whomever your neighbor is, seek to show hospitality. Bless those who persecute you and do not curse them, i.e., don't go on social media and say mean things. Don't curse those who curse you or don't care for you. Rather, you bless them. So if you want to go a step further, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. You can weep with your neighbor that is an outsider neighbor, may not even like your faith at all, but you can weep with them and have empathy for them. In fact, I'll tell you what, the biggest thing that we can bring to the culture right now is empathy. Empathy. I don't have to agree with you to hurt with you. I don't have to agree with you to feel for you. I don't even have to agree with you to love you. That is a mythology that says we must all agree if we're really going to love. No, you don't have to do that. I don't agree with anybody. But I love a lot of people, right? And so he's clear. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, don't be arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but rather do what is honorable in the sight of all. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. See, this is a list that I think is pretty powerful. Like, if we as insiders took what's inside the book seriously and lived out what we see just right here, that would make a pretty positive impact. And we say, all right, who's my neighbor? Whomever they are, this is what I'm going to do. So if my neighbor is LGBT, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is conservative, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is liberal, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is single, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is a big-time NRA person, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor's a redneck, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor's an environmentalist, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is a big-time Trump supporter, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is feeling the burn, that's what I'm going to do. If my neighbor is odd or Muslim or discouraged, divorced, rude, that's what I'm going to do. I think even on Sunday mornings, how we come together as a church, it's easy sometimes to focus on insiders, and we forget maybe people who may be insiders to the book but outsiders to our community of faith here, and they come in on Sunday morning, and you'll be able to see when somebody's new, usually as a family, because they're huddled like bison trying to stay alive in the winter. In the comments, right? They come in, and they all, which is natural. If I was going into some church with my wife and kids that I had never been to before, we would all grab coffee and huddle too, right? Let's just stay safe, kids, until this is over. We'll see if we like it or not, you know? And so, right? Like, I get it. And what can happen with the huddled bison of our guest for the day is that the rest of us kind of just don't notice that they're our new neighbor. We just kind of walk and whirve and sweave and get around, you know, like we miss them instead of saying, hey, there's a new face. I want to be hospitable. I want to go the extra mile. I want to show this kind of thing here in Romans chapter 12, right? But that's what we want to do. In fact, Paul has a good roadmap in Romans 15, too. He says, let each of us please his neighbor for his good to build him up. Let that be your mission statement, man. Whomever my neighbor is, I am going to focus on building that person up. I'm going to please my neighbor for their good. Now, I'm going to warn you, it's an insider warning. When insiders seek to really recklessly love and to dispense and display the brand of grace and to take their neighbor right where they're at, it gets messy. It does get messy. Right? And oftentimes it gets messy, not only as you're investing into the life of a person that who knows what's going on in their life at that time, right? But aside from that, it gets messy because the more you're going way out of your way to do good to your neighbor, to love your neighbor, to be peaceable to your neighbor, to come alongside and care for your neighbor, other insiders can look at that and start to look at you and wonder if you're still living inside the book, right? They can look and be like, I don't know, you seem to be really positive. Now you're letting them know they're wrong, right? Like that's always the first thing, right? You're letting them know they're wrong. And I can tell you even as firsthand as one who is in that very life of saying, man, I'm going to make sure no matter what the outsiders of my life know I love them. I have to remember that, you know what? In the end, some other insiders may look at me and say, you look too flimsy. But the outsiders that I'm loving, they'll know they're loved. Right? They'll know they're loved. And then hopefully from that, they'll be like, this person has loved me so much. What's different? I want what they have. And then from that, I can be like, hey, here's what life inside the book is. Now you have to wrestle with the insider realities of what is here. But see, I'd rather it be, man, the outsider says, I know there are Christians who love me, than the outsider says, I know there are Christians who judge me. Because again, outside my pay grade, right? My job is not the judge, not to the outsider. My job is to love, to dispense grace, to invest in, to be a peacemaker toward, to bless even if they curse. Right? That's what my job is. That's what our job is as insiders. And I would say what we need to really strive for as we do that, even though it's difficult, is that we need to display joy in the midst of all of that as we're doing it. And so that's number three. We love outsiders best when we face life's realities joyfully. Joyfully. I think this is one of those areas for us as insiders that is so important. It reminds me of like when I go to a restaurant, if I walk in the door and instantly the hostess looks at me like I've just ruined her day for showing up and wanting to spend money, like that whole thing. The rest of the meal shot for me, right? It doesn't matter what happens next. It's just like, bleh. But if I walk in the door like, great to have you with us this evening. We're going to find you a table right away. We're so glad. It's like, I'm like, oh, look at me. I'm a big shot now. Roll out the red carpet. You know, like you love it when people have joy. But if people don't seem to have joy, if they seem like you peed in their Wheaties and they're angry or whatever, like, man, it's like, that is not refreshing. And so as insiders who follow Jesus, who last week we learned when we really have our life centered in him, he gives us joy and peace and abundance that the world cannot rob from us, then we should really be, again, dispensaries of joy, right? I mean, when I meet joyful people, I'm like, I want what they're sipping. I don't know what it is, but I want, because that is worth it to me, right? I see this in Acts chapter 5, the apostles, they've gotten just, man, they got a taste of Jesus in a big way, and they're just doing stuff and saying stuff and sharing stuff, and the religious mucky mucks that don't care for any of that, they've arrested them and said, you can't talk in the name of Jesus anymore, and they beat them all. And it says they left from that beating rejoicing that they had been counted worthy basically to get their butt kicked, you know? And I love it because it's like high fives and chest bumps and everything because they're like, man, nothing can rob us of this joy. See, this is one of those things that I think for us as insiders, it's the place that we are to be in pursuit. As far as like, all right, Jesus, I want you to do more of this in me. I want you to make me an unstoppable force of joy. I say that because, again, part of our reputation can be fear-mongering. Part of our reputation can be we're so afraid of the future. We're so worried about what's next. We're worried about who's going to get elected. We're worried about the economy. We're worried about the social norms of society. We're worried about what the Supreme Court's going to do next. It's like too often we sound afraid. When Jesus was really clear and he says, don't be afraid. Do not fear. Do not worry. Right? He says, I've overcome the world. This is why he says, I'm giving you joy. This is why I'm giving you peace. This is why I'm giving you abundant life. And so that is the place that we are to be hungry. Jesus, help me with my joy. Now, we don't get this by clicking our heels or shaking our magic eight ball or whatever else. I mean, there's something we actually have to be in pursuit of to see joy. Paul says it in Romans 15:13. He says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing so that by the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope. How does the Christian display joy? Well, they don't. What we see here is the Christian is what? They go to God so that he can fill us with all joy in believing. And it's by the power of the Holy Spirit that we abound in hope. Joy on tap is going to Jesus every day. Right? That's what it is. It is not, I need to just bite down, try harder, put a fake smile on my face, act like nothing's wrong. That is not it. There is a profound dependency on God that comes out in this whole thing. And that's the way we do it. We don't do it by just trying to be tough enough. We do it by being needful, desperate, seeking, asking God to do the work, wanting him to take us along on the way. This is how we love the outsider, all right? Now, what I want to admit in all of this is that it is not easy. Just like the issue of judgment being above our pay grade, this feels like it's above our pay grade too. We're supposed to be inspirers. We're supposed to live what we believe. We're supposed to do it with joy and invest into others no matter how they feel about us. I mean, this feels like it's difficult stuff. And I would say it is. I'm not trying to say it's not. And so I think with that, there needs to be an honest prayer that we exhibit. I heard this honest prayer recently set to music. And it was from my daughter, Emma. She writes a lot of songs around the house. I'm going to ask my daughter to come out right now. And she wrote this one, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And I remember the first time I heard it, I'm like, wow, this is such a sincere prayer for this very idea of how we seek to be difference makers as insiders with grace toward outsiders, knowing that we are all too human, even in our insiderness. And it was a prayer where it was like, man, that captures what we should all be praying. So I want you to listen and enjoy this.
They're broken, they're tired, they're torn. But I'm not one that's much better. You might say that I see the way, but I'm blind. 'Cause even though I know which way, I struggle every time. But I know you, so it's my job to show. It's a burden that I don't know if I can handle. 'Cause how can I be the light if I can barely get it right? So give me a strength I need it now. Show me a way, just show me how to lift up your grace. Show me how to be the faith. I'm broken more than them. And the only thing I have is my advantage. Is you picked up the pieces, picked up the pieces, made me whole again. So now it's my job, it's my job to show them that's a burden that I don't know if I can handle. So how can I be the light if I can barely get it right? Strength I need it now, and show me a way, just show me how to lift up your grace. The faith. I don't know. I don't know if I'm enough, if I'm the right one for this job. I don't know, I don't know. I don't know, I don't know if I'm enough, if I'm the right one for this job. I don't know, I don't know. So give me a strength, I need it now. Please show me a way. Show me how. So give me a strength, I need it now. And show me a way to show me how to lift up your grace.
That is a sincere prayer that we should all have. We are imperfect people, right? But Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians, even if we're imperfect, man, we're still changed. And because we're changed, we are then called to be messengers of reconciliation. And the way that we can most display that is that we live as those people so that other people can look and go, wow, that is what I need. That is what I seek. I want that reconciliation too. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, I thank you for the reminder of that prayer, for the reminder of what it means to love those outside the book, and that we would be faithful in being difference makers, holding to the label of grace, living out the truth of grace in our own lives as we share grace with others. We thank you, Jesus, and need you and love you in your name. Amen.
Please stand.